and welcome to the Killing Kittens podcast with me, Emma Kenny, trying to somehow bring order to the chaos that's never far away when we make this show. As always, it wouldn't be the KK podcast without CEO and founder of Killing Kittens, Emma Sale, who's here, and the lady who always makes us feel better about our love lives.
I'm talking terrible.
Harriet Minter.
Where are we going with that?
The vagina
what
talker.
What does that mean?
How are we all, ladies?
Well, I was fine, but now I'm very worried about what my love life says about me.
Well, very well there. It's time to welcome yet another guest. We get very excited about this part because literally everybody who comes in this podcast blows personally my mind and everybody else, particularly Harriet's over there, without a doubt.
<quite small. laughs>
This week, we've been joined by an amazing man. It's Dr. Chris Morris Roberts. But Chris, your backstory is pretty insane. And usually I take a moment to read out the blog and biog of you, but just tell us a little bit about what involvement you have with penises.
Well, it sort of came around the houses in a bit of a way. So I'm a podiatrist, is my first career.
That's not a penis.
No, it's not a penis.
That's feet, is that
but
feet?
Feet, yeah. But there's lots of sort of similarities to feet and shoes. Inserting feet into shoes is like intercourse. There's lots of symbolism with stuff there. The nice. Big toe, the penis, there's lots of sort of strange
Isn't
metaphors.
Big feet and big penises.
Oh, yeah, size of your feet and stuff.
Yeah,
they always say that, but I've got relatively like size 8 feet, and I say it's no representation. And you can ask my boyfriend, and he'll tell you the same as well. I was a podiatrist, then an academic, and I decided to do a PhD looking at sportsmen and why they wear the shoes they do. And mainly, sportsmen wanted to talk about one body part, which was their penis. And so,
really?
A third of my thesis was about cockocracy, as I called it, or the politics of the penis.
Can I just check that when it comes down to the Urban Dictionary, is it your word, cockocracy?
Well, there's different. There's I'm the top in Urban Dictionary for the definition of cockocracy.
Really?
Yeah, it's quite nice. Yeah. I do tell people, the youth that, and they get very excited.
The youth.
Yeah. I tell the youth, you know, students, and they're like, oh my God, he's in the Urban Dictionary. And I'm like, yeah, tell my parents, they have no idea what that is.
You have no idea that actually me, Harriet and Emma are all really impressed by that.
It's like my mouth wide open.
But it's also used, so like when my work went quite viral, Condoleezza Rice and various people got on board, because cockocracy can also, as another definition, be looked at like the use of sort of politics of the penis against women.
Right.
So there is two different sides of it. But my definition of cockocracy is about the politics of the penis between men about men.
So go on, what would you describe? What is that about?
Well, sort of locker room culture, you know, why men worry about the size of their penis.
Do they compare themselves to each other?
And, yeah, of course, of course.
The power, the bigger ones are more powerful than the smaller ones.
Well, ironically, I was mentioning to you just beforehand, on my way over here, I was destined to be involved in this podcast because I needed the loo. Popped into Liverpool Street Station for a little week, and there's a guy flashing his knob at me right next to me, showing me his size. And I looked down and went, oh, bless, and carried on peeing.
I mean, that is the correct response to that.
Oh, bless, I'm guessing it was a small one.
It was average, you know. I've seen a lot of penises in my life, so.
What was he doing with it?
Well, he was looking for action, probably. It's quite a big thing.
Why do men do the flashing, though? Can I ask this? Because I've only been flashed once. And let me tell you. Only once. I know how rude. I was on the top of a bus reading Harry Potter. Why would you flash a girl reading Harry Potter? Really? I mean, that's weird.
It's a wizard, Harry.
If you're reading 50 Shades of Grey, then maybe.
Maybe it's all kinky, though,
but
isn't
it? What is it about men that's like you just desperately want to...
It's not the same as like penis pics, like sending penis pics. You're just going, there's not... I love a penis, but I don't think there's anything massively attractive about a penis. Even a massive one, it's just a penis.
I think you've got to be in the mood for it, haven't you?
A penis pic.
Yeah,
I think there can be some beautiful penises.
There
I'm going
some.
To be honest. I am. You know, I've seen and I'm
Which is
in
the
possession.
Most beautiful penis you've ever seen?
My husband's.
Oh, really?
And answer. That's got nothing to do with it being my husband. It really hasn't. I'm highly judgmental. But it's something about the shape and the girth and the weightiness and the size and the colour. And I know that's not necessarily talked about, but it's a nice colour.
Yeah. You really love it. You can see your
It's a passion.
That's why you have sex every day.
It is. I'd also just, without him, want to keep it.
not going to lie.
But you can have them made, can't you?
You can have dildos made in the shape.
It would have to happen. It would have to
happen.
Me
and my boyfriend have spoken. I shouldn't really talk about my business idea, but I think there's an amazing opportunity to make jellied penises. You know, like in the 80s, you could buy those He-Man things that you used to peel and there'd be like jelly inside, like a little mold.
I remember that completely. Yeah, like the green and purple skeleton.
Yeah. Exactly.
You pee on it.
No, you peel.
I pee on it. You pee on He-Man, I was hearing.
Well, you could do if you wanted to. No, they were like little jellies, but you could do like giant size ones of your husband, boyfriend's penises and gift them to, I don't know, wife, girlfriend,
there's
boyfriend.
That Wobbly Willy company. I only know this because they wanted to send us one to put on the KK site and do it. I think it's called Wobbly Willy. And they wanted to make one of me. So there's dildo, right? They wanted photos. The girls sent off in the office, which they thought was hilarious, pictures of me. And suddenly, a couple of weeks later, this dildo arrived, which actually a very real life kind of clay head that looked like me, complete with blonde ponytail, attached to a dildo. Wow. And I was like, wow, that's a little bit narcissistic, let's be honest.
I'm just going to, you know, hello me.
Yeah.
But also, how do you feel
about myself?
How do you feel about putting your own head inside yourself?
That's the thing. It was like proper narcissistic. If my husband's head had been on it, then I think that's what it's meant for. You get your partner's one so that you go and, you know, if you're not with your other half, then you're going to be shagging them. And, hello. With a little head looking back at you.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I have had one of mine made for an ex because he quite liked it. But I'm not like, I feel like I'm boasting here about my penis size, but it's not.
I don't think, though, that a man should not be proud of their penis. I think they should be. I think it's like we do a lot of stuff around body confidence these days, right? And like particularly women's areas like vaginas, boobs, even bellas, pregnant bellas. There's a lot of this female empowerment and real powerful.
Yeah.
And I do think that men at the moment, I mean, are really, and this isn't to try to say that I don't understand power dynamics in society. I absolutely do. You know, I know that we've been in a situation where it's been unequal for ridiculous amounts of time, since the beginning of time, probably. But I also think that it's a really confusing time as the multifaceted dynamics of women grow, right? Men become confused about one position. And secondly, when it comes down to power and the penis, it's almost like the silencing is beginning. And I think we've talked about it previously. I have an issue with rage against women that stems from silencing, to some degree, men and power.
Yeah.
And how do you, sitting on the side of cacocracy and looking at penis politics, where are you coming from when you think about society today and men in general with their sexual experiences and pride regarding things like their penis?
Well, there's lots of things there. I think it's really interesting. I've spoken about this a lot recently to friends. So my dad was like, he was bald like me.
Yeah.
And as a kid, we all used to tease him about being bald and he'd like, I don't give a fuck. Women love men with bald heads and big dicks. That's all you need to worry about. And he used to tell, and I've got like three other brothers, and he used to tell us that all the time. And I think it gave me a very secure sense of confidence about my body, my penis.
And your bald head.
And my bald head. And I, out of all the things, you know, lots of men have, you know, issues about not having hair and, you know, you can have all sorts of plugs. And I was like, it's the one thing I'd worry about the least. And my penis size, I also worry about the least. But my dad sort of instilled this thing that it was like, you've got to be confident about it because women will like it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, later on, it was like, and men like it too. It's what I am. Gay men.
Sorry, Dad. You didn't specify.
Yeah, you didn't specify. So I think that it's really interesting about, like, I was instilled with a lot of body confidence. You know, there was other bits of me that I wasn't so confident. I'm like, you want bigger pecs and all these. But I think it's all related that our men's bodies, you know, that we're in a difficult time for men. You know, there's lots of pressure to look a certain way.
Yeah.
And you've got to have pecs and you've got to have these abs and you've got to bulk and then you've got to lean. And I think it's different on different generations. So the younger generation, they're very lean, ripped type of muscle. Then you come to 30s and 40s and it's quite stockier and beefier. And then sort of it's hard to know where you sit then in those different dynamics of the body. And penis politics is really, you know, fascinating because I don't think I'm very much. It was funny, after I finished my thesis, I went for a job interview, and all I did in this interview, it was at a university, was talk about cock. I was like, cock this and penis this and cock this. And I didn't get the job straight, like later on I got the job. But I found out that they were totally shocked that I'd said the C word, cock, like so much in this interview. And I'm sort of didn't think anything about it. Like I'd become so blasé because I'd spent 4 months just writing about Cork and the politics and what it meant and what that I and I'm very open. I'm a bit more conscious about it now because that sort of made a dent in my confidence because I thought, you know, we should all talk about it this way. But I don't think enough men do because I think everyone's worried about, are they big enough? Is it small enough? Do you have foreskin? Do you not have foreskin? Is it the right colour? What if you have a prosthetic ball? What if you've had cancer? What, you know, do you shave? How do you shave it? Do you go natural? And there's lots of things the same with, you know, probably female genitalia as well.
I'm 1970s Bush. Aww. Rocking the au naturel and
Harriet
always will.
Harriet talks to vaginas.
I do. Only the friendly ones. It's a whole long story.
I feel like I'm missing out. Do I need to start talking to vaginas?
Definitely do. I want to ask, did you notice any themes when you were talking to the sportsman? Because in my head, I sort of have made this connection, I don't know where it's come from, which says that sportsmen are maybe on kind of either end of the spectrum, which is either they have very big penises and they've got lots of confidence and that's turned them into kind of competitive types, or they have very small penises and they're massively overcompensating in some way, shape, form. Basically, I'm getting that whole competition coming from penis size. So, does the research back that up?
So my research suggested that generally there's always one guy in the team who has a massive penis. So like a rugby team or a basketball team. And what happens is the rest of the team sort of revere that guy. And he becomes like a source of camaraderie, bonding. They laugh about it. They joke about it. The others go like, he's basically the dong god sort of thing.
King dong.
Yeah, basically. But there were some caveats to it. You had to prove you could use it. Because if you didn't actually then sleep with women, then what was the point of having a big penis? And so there were some problems associated with that for the team.
Pressure.
Yeah, pressure. And so it helped bond a team because then when they would all go out as a group of lads, they'd go, yeah, he's the one with the big dick, whoa, you know, and all those sorts. And it helped bond the team even more. There was even a documentary, oh my God, it was sort of a bit comical really, about this rugby team that was out in like Sheffield or whatever, and most of them had their dicks out the whole night, this rugby team, just showing them off
they
to women
that. I remember university, I was a lacrosse player and we did everything with the rugby team, and literally every Wednesday night sports night there they were,
yeah,
the penises just on display the whole time.
Yeah, it's why I spent a lot of time on a Wednesday afternoon in the student union. get them out next.
Do you think it's kind of a tribal thing, that?
I think so, yeah.
You know, as opposed to it being like what you were talking about earlier on, Harriet, this idea of like a guy flashing you. I mean, that is like a sexual predator and really negative behaviour. But actually what you're talking about is more that camaraderie, but also something to do with status.
Yeah. Well, it does. Well, I called it cock supremacy.
Hey,
that's
nice.
What I called it. So it was like an ultimate, you know, hierarchy in a pecking order, that this was sort of like the guy with the big dick.
Have you looked at any tribes?
Peckham order,
how, you know,
basically.
The tribes. And tribes in the Amazon and places like, you know, other places, remote places, and they're all sort of naked.
Yeah.
Whether actually, it'd be interesting to know whether they have the same politics going on within their tribe.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be worse.
What's your next one?
That's my next project.
Mm-hmm. What happens with guys who just aren't endowed? So I, when I was a young person, had a liaison. After having this long-term relationship as a young person, I had a liaison with this guy and I got a bit frisky, and it was so small that I almost felt a bit scarred by the situation, because I genuinely felt, this is awful to admit, really unattracted to him. Really unattracted to him.
I had one like a finger, and I just thought, I didn't even want to sleep with it. I thought, because it's never going to touch the side. She says that now after three babies, naturally. I don't think anything is going to touch the side. Hello,
maybe a dildo with your head on it.
Yeah, exactly. Two.
But how does that play out then? Because I know that for guys, that must be really powerfully humiliating.
Yeah.
How does your research kind of explore what the politics are when you don't fit that archetypal mould of having a substantial or at least an average penis?
Well, I think it was mainly through sort of mockery and banter. You got through it through banter. Oh, yeah, he's got a tiny dick. Oh, yeah, it's a small dick. But I think that was sort of basically overshadowed by lots of insecurity there, because you would be incredibly insecure if your penis was small, and lots of men, you know, aren't sort of 10 inches long and you know, thick.
But then
and
I found that some of the bigger ones, they're shit in the sack, because they just rely on that big penis, whereas some of the really, I haven't slept with that many people. James has my husband. I'm just telling you that now. whereas the smaller ones were really, really good because actually they were good at everything else. And actually to a woman, it's not really that, you know, actually most of it isn't the actual penetration part. Actually, it's everything else that will turn us on and, you know, make us orgasm. So it's sort of that's what I've found that actually sort of the bigger ones often can give fuck.
So absolutely on everything one else. Of the best lovers, and I definitely use that word lover because it really was best lovers has I've ever had has an absolutely tiny penis, like tiny.
Really,
you could miss it. and I remember being really shocked the first time I saw it and being like having a moment where I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And also, I don't know whether to mention this fact. Yeah. Like, are you presumably aware of it? But do I bring? Not just for me, but like, is it good for you? I don't know. But he's absolutely sensational in bed. Sensational. And every time I have sex with him, I tell him how good he is in bed. I'm like, you are really one of the best people I've ever been to bed with. Really love going to bed with you. And I think it just never goes through because in his head, there's always this thing.
It's all
which
about
is,
the penis.
So he definitely has issues. You've got to a point where you've approached that issue and talked to him about
it. We haven't approached it. I've just basically decided on his behalf that he clearly does. I don't know.
Is
I don't know
around?
At all.
Will he be listening right now?
Will he be listening?
but I think, like, you know, I think there is, I definitely see in him something that is a kind of link to self-esteem. And I've seen it with other men who I think have, I mean, I don't know about you ladies, but unless somebody is on an extreme level, unless they're at either end of the spectrum, I think they're all kind of the same size. They all kind of blur together.
And actually you can get one that's too big and you go, absolutely no chance.
No, not having it.
No.
See, I sort of disagree a little bit.
Do you think? Have you, can you like, when you look at them, can you be like, oh, 6.5? Seven.
I can sort of, yeah, by glance.
I have no idea.
I have to say, in my youth, I got round the block a little bit as a gay man. I explored a lot of penises. I know what I like, even with one partner. I remember being on the dance floor, and before we'd even kissed, I remember groping it going, I just want to check this is sizable
enough
before I take
this forward.
But is
that more of a man thing, like a gay man thing, that because to women it's more, you know, there's a lot more to sex than actual penetration. It's everything else, whereas to two gay men, the penis is so important in your sex life.
It is important to me, definitely.
Would there be a different...
Well, I think there are some gay couples that only do mutual masturbation.
Yeah, exactly.
Some gay couples don't do penetration at all.
Yeah. Rocks and sponges.
Yeah.
Someone told me that.
And I, you know, it's really, I think well, because I've written down here, I think what's really interesting about looking at different sizes, I think a really important part of that is about attraction.
Yes.
Like you, I think you can look, you know, well, I'm a big one for faces.
Yeah.
So I'm very attracted to someone's face. If they've got a good face, I'm like, that's number one. And number two is probably the downstairs for me. And if I am attracted to both, and then you look at it and go, that's an attractive penis.
Please have a personality.
Yeah.
Please have a personality.
Right, which is I've never looked at a penis and gone, that's an attractive one and an unattractive one.
I have. Absolutely.
This side of the table, very much feeling the beauty in the penis.
And actually,
I'm like, does everything else do the job?
But I think that when people talk about penises and the definite message to a lot of men, not gay men, because it's a different conversation, is that they're ugly. And I just don't get that. Yeah. I just don't get that they're ugly. I find them quite beautiful when they are a good package. Yeah.
And
I almost think,
upright.
Yeah, the way that we discuss male genitalia, it's quite derogatory. Mm. It's either about size, even I was discussing that a minute ago, but it's also about the fact that, oh, they're ugly and the balls are, you know, and all of that stuff. And actually, I do think that if men were talking about women's boobs and vaginas that way, they'd get a really,
but then
really...
vaginas aren't really spoken about as being... beautiful.
But
things,
again, men.
You know, chicken giblets.
But
you know.
I think men, on the whole, are really positive about women's vaginas. I really do. Mm. I think that they like the look of them, they like the smell of them, they like the touch of them. There's a really like celebration of that. And I do think that at the moment there's a bit of confusion around men and their sexual power. Are you finding that, like even in the gay community, for example, where you'd think there's more of a linearity around males feeling able to express themselves as men and being men? But in general society, like with hashtag Me Too, with all the things going on around like dominance and power, what's your position when you're thinking about the either confusion or non-confusion of men per se in the world at the moment in the Western society in the UK?
Oh, gosh, that's a tricky one.
It's meant to be.
Thanks very much.
We want an answer and we want it to be absolutely explicitly correct.
And a paper.
Well, now. Absolutely. You've got a dissertation.
Yeah.
It's tricky. I think gay men, I think there's a... from my perspective, we have quite a lot of ownership over our bodies and know how we deal with it. And, you know, we're quite sexually active and we know how to, you know, and the whole tops and bottoms and all that sorts of stuff. But something I've written down, which I think is really important to come to, was after my research, it went quite viral. I was in lots of like the newspapers and the Metro and Guard, all over the place.
All right, people.
Yeah, I know. And I got lots of letters from men who had small penises saying, because I wasn't, the work mainly spoke about revering men with large penises, but it also spoke about, you know, that body positivity is really important and about inclusive of team, no matter what your size. And the letters I got from, and these were straight and gay men, were saying it felt very positive to have those messages and that talking about the penis out there.
Yeah.
Because whenever do you read about penis stuff in the newspaper? Ever. No. Really. Mm. And if you do, it's usually to do with Viagra or impotence or premature ejaculation. Yeah. It's not ever about, does she have a penis and it exists? And just living, you know, embodiment, having this penis.
Mm. Owning your penis.
Yeah, owning your penis, basically.
We there's a big women thing on like owning our bodies and that. But I've there isn't really a kind of men owning your bodies. There's a big, men's mental health movement going on and, you know, talking about your emotions. But actually, I haven't seen anything on the whole, you know, owning your willy. We'll start the campaign.
And it's really important, you know, to open that discussion up. And I chat about all sorts of things and people are like, oh my God, TMI, Chris. And I'm like, no, just go for it and just keep talking about it.
I think there's a bit of fear, though, in society at the moment, isn't there? I mean, Harriet, you're a journalist who kind of writes about this.
There's definitely a legacy fear, which is penis as a weapon of war, you know, which is as a weapon, as something to dominate and control. As a vehicle for suppressing women. And, you know, and I think there's sort of, back in the 1970s, there was a whole theory of feminist thought, which was that essentially the second you were born a man and you owned a penis, that was it. You were already against women and you were part of the patriarchy because every form of penetrative sex was really a form of rape because women could never truly consent. That is extreme. And I don't think you would find very many people nowadays who would agree with that. But I think what that has left us with is a legacy where we do see penises as potentially dangerous and potentially threatening. Mm-hmm. And that comes from when we talk about male desire, I think, where we talk about male desire as this uncontrollable thing. He just couldn't help himself, you know, which I don't think is realistic. I don't think that's right.
No.
You know? Hasn't been my experience of men.
Yeah.
But because we talk about male desire in that way, then we weaponize men's penises.
Mm.
And that's when it starts to be a place of we have to empower women and lift them up around their bodies, but we have to disempower men. Mm. And actually, I don't think that works for either gender.
How do we manage it, though?
How do we manage
that, in your opinion?
In my world, I think it is about being able to celebrate male sexuality and female sexuality.
Yeah.
Being able to celebrate the fact that we all have desire, we all have needs, but equally that we, as humans, we are all hopefully respectful and understanding of other people's desires.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe that. I believe that the vast majority of the world is good. I believe the vast majority of the world wants to do the right thing.
Mm.
And then I think in order to do that, we then also have to be able to hold a place where the vast majority wants to do the right thing, but has maybe done the wrong thing at some point in the past.
Yeah, I think even as a mother,
and
I've got two boys, you've got a boy yourself, haven't you?
Mm.
So have you got any children?
No, I haven't.
So gorgeous chihuahuas, though, nonetheless. Yeah, you are actually a father, as far as I'm concerned.
And he has a penis and he does lick it a lot. So.
Absolutely. But as a mother, one of the things that I've had to do with both of my teenage boys now is equip them with an understanding of what consent is, to actually make them aware that whether they want to be powerful or not, they are powerful because they are male and they are white men. And unfortunately, the world is skewed. And unless they recognise their privilege and their power, then they can be dangerous. So when they go out to parties, they have to express to me their understanding of what happens at a party if there is a girl involved. And they have to express what consent is. They have to tell their friends if pictures are being taken of inappropriate stuff. They have to make sure that a girl isn't drunk if she's going off with somebody. And they have to have this, not because I'm trying to make them afraid, but because I'm trying to empower them with an understanding that they are privileged to be in a position to be able to go out and be men who have that power, use it purposefully and protect because that's how we kind of create that equality again, isn't it, within allowing women to feel safe.
But don't you, because I had a long chat at the weekend with my family about, I think there was a guy who was recently convicted for touching a woman's arm.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And he was flirting. He said he was flirting. And
he had social issues as well.
Yeah, he had social issues as well. Yeah. But I think that this then comes back to an issue that I think it's changing how men and women are able to flirt with each
other. There's a big fear factor going on. Because the stats were out, the post-Me Too had the ripple effect. Actually, it's affecting women in business as well, because it's not just men. They've all been surveyed, and men won't, on going on business trips, they're less likely to take a female colleague. And even females are saying the same thing. And they're less likely to hire attractive women because they don't want to be put in a situation where something might happen. Mm. So it's sort of, there's this big sort of backfiring going on, actually.
I also think that there's a misconception that men are the only predators out there. I mean, I certainly in television watched women absolutely in positions of power misuse their power horrifically. Yeah. And it's been quite shocking to watch that.
And also women, you know, the whole, you know, when men have the wedding rings on and stuff, and I listen to girlfriends going, well, you know, I want him to wear a wedding ring because, you know, then it shows that he's, you know, he's married. And I'm like, trust me, it's not going to make a blind bit of difference. Mm-hmm. If they're going to cheat, they're going to cheat. Plus, a wedding ring on, a lot of women out there, they see a wedding ring and it becomes even more of an achievement to go after the man with a wedding ring on. And actually, women are really devious, manipulative creatures. We really are. especially when men are drunk. So,
Emma with her positive badges for women to wear. Please do get in touch with us at Killing Kittens. She'll be able to send you some of those out.
But I just think the conversation I was having with my family and my parents was like, how do men flirt and how do women flirt? Because it's changing how naturally you would interact with people.
So I have this theory about this, which is that actually the problem isn't flirting, the problem is unwanted flirting.
Okay.
And the fact that most of us are really, really bad with rejection.
Okay.
And that's where the problem is. So when you're flirting with somebody, and maybe this is also something that I don't know from a female point of view, you can tell me from a male point of view. From a female point of view, I think we are, from a really early age, conditioned to be aware of other people's responses to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very aware if I say something and it's gone down really badly, I'm like, oh, God, okay, I feel it. Or if I'm talking to someone and I'm not getting anything back from them, I'm like, okay, this is not going well, I'm out. What I have seen a lot of is a lot of generally men, honestly, but generally men trying to flirt with somebody that they quite fancy, not get anything back and not taking the no.
Okay.
Mm.
And then calling them fridge
flirting.
Bitches. And, okay. You know what I mean? Get
calling
that actually being really rude.
Or just being really rude, or, you know, or just keeping going. Because in fairness, we do tell men, like, keep going. We tell men that for a start, we say, oh, well, women, you know, will always say no first and then it's a yes. And we tell girls that. We say, no, don't be too forward. So actually, we just need to, on both sides, be like, are you interested? Yes, no, right, it's fine.
Mm.
And then for men to be like, actually, what you've heard is a no. Doesn't mean that you're terrible. Doesn't mean you're never going to get laid. Doesn't mean you're the guy with the big dick in the rugby team and now you've let the whole team down.
Yeah.
Just means that this girl on this occasion is not feeling it. Or this boy on this occasion is not feeling it. Move on.
Yeah.
And the same for women, right? So when we get a no, not to be then like, right, I'm going after her, I'm going to make him mine no matter what. Just be like, that's a no, let it go.
So when there was recent talk about legislating wolf whistles, where was everybody on that?
On that one, I said the day I don't get wolf whistle is the day that I sob uncontrollably into my pillow at night. Which, so, you know, I get people don't want, but I quite like being wolf whistled at. I just think, you know what I mean, there's a guy out there who's noticed me, who goes, he just whistles. And for my confidence, I'll take that. I'm 41, mother of three. I'll keep taking it. And as I said, the day it stops, then I'll sob.
What about you, Harriet?
I was trying to think whether or not I was on Good Morning Britain arguing about it, and therefore what line I had to take. I can't remember. So essentially, I...
we won't send this to Piers Morgan.
I go back and forth on it, which is, I've definitely had moments like Emma where I've walked past and somebody's whistled at me and been like, oh, hurrah, I'm good. And then, but then what kicks in for me is then this thought which goes, oh, hang on, I've been conditioned to think the best thing that can happen to me today is some man sexually approves of me. It's not the best thing that can happen to me today. There are some other good things that can happen to me today too. And so then I go against it. And the other thing is that I tend to feel like it's great when you're in a place where you're feeling really positive and dynamic and totally safe.
Yeah.
When you're in a place where maybe you're walking down a road where you don't know where you're going and you're on your phone and it's clear you're a bit lost and you're wearing heels that you can't run in and you're late and you're having a bad day and all your kind of fear mechanisms are up anyway, and then somebody whistles at you, it's something like, oh God, and now there's another threat. Even though there isn't, right? Even though it's just some guy whistling, whatever. But it just adds to that threat level. And I feel like, for me, can we just take that out of the equation? That said, I just don't think we can go around arresting people for whistling. I think it's impractical.
What about you? What's your position on that?
But it's interesting. So I am currently going through a divorce. Yeah. And so there was a big... three months when I was single.
It's joyful, isn't it, divorce?
Joyful. Everyone should do it. And absolutely delightful experience.
Not stressful at all.
But actually, it's really... What I found was, like, I'd see a hot guy that I thought was really attractive, and I'm not one for wolf whistling or any of those things, but everyone's staring at their phone, so you can't catch anyone's eye.
That's very true.
So you're sort of, like, walking past, trying, like, dipping your head, trying to look, and then you look even creepier than if I just whistled at them, because I'm sort of, like, trying to catch someone's eye. So it's actually quite hard to... to flirt in a way.
Yeah, I find on the political level that I'm somewhere in between. So on a personal level, I have been known, if somebody has been whistled at in front of me and I don't get it, to stop and challenge the people by suggesting that I would like to. And I've once had a round of applause, which I thought was very kind because I think it's quite funny. But I think what, Harriet, you're saying, I think society runs best and it looks after the most vulnerable, like the slowest of the slow, the weakest of the weak, the most vulnerable of the most vulnerable.
Oh, I love that.
Because it's how we protect, isn't it? We have to think about the most vulnerable. So I guess that the reason that it struck me as interesting, and certainly around penis politics and male empowerment versus, you know, male domination, it's that idea that when that girl is walking down the street, if she's been a rape victim or a sexual abuse victim or she's been dominated elsewhere, it compounds that. And I guess that from my perspective, as much as, like you, on a personal level, it really doesn't bother me. In fact, I find it quite entertaining and certainly don't think that they're out at all to dominate me or abuse me in any way. It's what triggers that person's individual experience. Yeah. And I think society works best when it protects the most vulnerable without thinking about your personal subjectivity.
And I think also that's something that we can kind of bring back into this idea of learning about body language, learning about what's going on for people. Like, you see a woman walking down the road, she's having a great day, she is strutting her stuff, she's happy as. If you whistle at her, you're probably not going to... Probably, I say probably, not always.
Especially
probably.
If the women like, you know, yells the white boys before they woof or so.
Exactly. I've done that a few times. I mean...
Maybe I'll start it.
But that's like a really amazing example of a woman who's just like, this is what I want. I've told you what I want. Yeah. Go for it, right? Yeah. And like, how great is that? And then if we learn that, then we can see the people that are like, oh God, I'm not feeling it today and I need my own space and I need to not be hassled. We just have a much easier world if we all thought a little bit more about what is someone's body language saying to me right now.
And it's really, body language is really, I think now with phones, as I've mentioned already, it's a lot different to read people's language because people are closed. And
in bars and stuff, people just sit there on their phones.
On their phones, and like dating is online. And it blew my mind because I was out of the game for like 11 years. And then coming back.
Hello, Grindr.
It was hysterical. So I buggered off to LA for 3 weeks. And my friend said, you need to download one of the apps, the dating apps. So I went, sure. So the only one I knew of was Grindr. So I downloaded Grindr. And then like 2 days later, I said, all I keep getting is dick pics and assholes. And she went, well, which one did you download? And I went, Grindr. She went, no, that's hookup. So I went, oh, well, that, I don't just want hookup. No. So then I deleted that one. And then I went on to buy, and I basically worked my way through all these apps trying to find what they meant and how people interact. And it was a whole, even as a sociologist, trying to work out how people flirt and engage with each other. And this is men or men on these apps. And then learning from my friends, oh, no, like Tinder for straight people is like hookup, but for gay people, it's more dating. And then the whole thing was blowing my mind on then how do you flirt on these? And I'm much better. Like all my relationships before, I was in a bar, I'd go up and go, I think you're really hot. Or like with my ex-husband, I went over to him and walked into a bar, saw him and went, we're going to know each other a long time. 11 years later, we were together. My current boyfriend, I just saw him across the street and just knew. And I was like,
is this where we
hot.
Find out you just kidnap people?
Yeah.
Saw
yeah.
them. I'm a psycho. Dragged them off the street.
Them in the basement.
Yeah, and then I cut off their penises and they're all lined up on a wall. And that's how I'm the god of penises.
If ever there was an end to a podcast on such a note, it has been arrived at today. That's about it for this episode of Killing Curtains. Thank you so much, Emma, and thank you, Harriet. As ever, amazing to hear both of your views. Extra special thanks to this week's amazing guest. It has been an absolute joy. Dr. Chris.
It's been a pleasure.
That's what we're going to call you completely from now on. And learning about cacocracy and all the things in penis politics that I'm sure a lot of people have never heard of, but it's really, really intoxicating to hear you speak. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us by emailing kittens@thepodcastworks.com, or you can message us on Twitter @killingkittens. And if you've liked what you've heard, please make sure you subscribe to this podcast and feel free to give us how many stars?
Five
stars. Thank you, Dr. Chris. That's by Dr. Chris.
Yeah, do it.
Thanks for listening. See you next time. Goodbye.